Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I am your host, Vincent Trewell. I have two very special guests tonight from Florida Paranormal Investigators, Sarah and Jen. Please, if you could introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about FPI.
Sure. I'm Jen, and I met Sarah probably, I don't know,
4 or 5 months ago?
Probably 5, 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But we've both been very active in paranormal investigating and studying for quite a long time. So we're just really excited to grow our group and get out there and help people, you know, figure out and find some answers to their paranormal problems. Yes.
And I'm Sarah. I go by Sarah Normal on my social media, which I understand is not an original thought, but I do have a trademark. So, but obviously that's not my real name. Can call me Sarah. And yeah, I've been studying the paranormal since I was a teenager. I moved to Florida about 10 years ago to finish raising my family. And they're grown now. And I'm the wife of an airline pilot. So I found myself here in the Tampa Bay area looking for a group to continue my studying with here in Florida. I was brought into our former team by Jen. And I think it was then that we realized that her and I kind of have a kismet thing going on. It was like sisterhood from the very start. And we're both empaths and we sort of just got each other from the very first investigation. We were on the same wavelength. And the more I talked to Jen and the more I work with our former group, we realized that we could bring something really different to the arena of paranormal investigation in Central Florida. And that was compassion and empathy. Spirits are people and they deserve our understanding as much as the living do. They're not there to be exploited. They're not there just to be put on YouTube. They're not there just to be put on TikTok. They want what you and I want, and that is to be heard. So that's what we're trying to do.
That makes a lot of sense. Without naming obvious names, the approach of going to some place that's haunted and then yelling at them and trying to get a reaction just seems incredibly counterproductive and very disrespectful. And to treat any entity like that is, no, I appreciate where you're coming from. And that's a much better approach, in my opinion, than the sideshow antics that sometimes make it on cable TV, you know.
Absolutely.
I can appreciate that. And for what it's worth, Vincent Trewell isn't on my birth certificate either, but that's what I use for many, many reasons for all my paranormal stuff. So,
absolutely.
You know, yeah, that's just being honest, you know, it's no big deal. Mm-hmm. So you said you met relatively recently, mm-hmm. but were you both or either of you were interested in this stuff your whole lives or not?
Yeah, I think we both have been interested in it our entire lives. We've both had a lot of paranormal experiences as children. Ironically, Jen and I grew up very near to each other in the same area of New York.
That is interesting.
Yeah, yep. And now we live very close to each other in Florida. And the area of New York we grew up in, I don't know if you're familiar with the Niagara Falls, sort of that northern part of Western New York.
Oh, okay.
Very
yes.
Close to Canada. Yep. So there's a lot of history. It's very haunted. I'm going to let Jen talk a little bit more about her childhood experiences first, because she's had some really cool ones.
Yes.
Yes,
as a child, I grew up in an old Victorian home that was built in the early 1800s. And a lot of unexplained things would happen in my home as a child. And I grew up in a very charismatic Christian home. Yes, my parents believed in the paranormal and in spirits, but it was kind of taboo to talk to the dead, so to speak, or talk to spirits or ghosts. So even though I had a lot of activity in my home, such as lights turning on and off by themselves, doors opening and shutting constantly, footsteps all through the night, scratching in my wall right by my bed as a little girl, just things that really terrified me, I wasn't able to really verbalize with my parents. Instead, it was just a very fearful time in my life. And as I got older, I wanted answers. Why that was happening to me, why I would have these horrible nightmares, just the same nightmares over and over again. Why I felt like something in my home was trying to get my attention. I took it as negative at the time because I was brought up to like that was taboo. You don't talk to the dead. And so I just feared it. So as I got older, I wanted to understand it better because I was exposed to it throughout my whole childhood.
Yeah, so if I can relate, because growing up, I basically had two options. Either there's nothing there and you're going crazy, or it's all demons and then you're in real trouble, you know? Yeah. And that's not a great choice, you know? And I don't think that reflects most paranormal activity. And I'm sure that probably has borne itself out, but please go on.
Go ahead, Sam.
Okay. Well, I was actually just going to say, I listened to your, episode on the spiritualist movement.
Thank you.
It was funny. You were talking about Lilydale. So I visited Lilydale a lot when I was younger. My mom noticed that I was, you know, talking to the friendly couple in the basement, playing records for them and stuff like that when I was younger. So nothing scary like Jen. It was opposite. It was kind of positive. My grandfather had passed. I sat and read stories with him in his chair. I mean, to me, they were there. They were real. They were my friends. They were happy experiences. So, you know, I was at Lilydale a lot. My mom would take me there. Luckily, I had the opposite experiences, Jen, as I had very hippie parents that were into that kind of stuff. So it was encouraged. And I didn't say both. We've talked about it before. Of us had some very kind of clairvoyant childhoods. And then when I was older, I moved to an area of New York. It's called Youngstown, New York. And there is a fort there that was used in the Revolutionary War. And even before that, because right across is Fort George, which is in Canada. So it's right on Lake Ontario. In a portion of Youngstown, the town I lived in, had been burned down by the British. And I happened to live on a part that was like right there, right outside the fort, that back in those days would have been burned down. And very, very spooky experiences, similar to you actually, Jen. And there's these scratching under the bed, and I'd look under the bed because I thought it was my cat, only to find there was no cat under the bed. You'd hear soldiers marching by in the middle of the night. And it got to the point eventually where I would get up and go walk down to the cemetery in the fort, the old cemetery, at night by myself. And I did see a full body apparition there in the cemetery, which should have terrified me because it was a small child and it wasn't, I don't know if she was trying to scare me. And she looked kind of scary, but it really kind of just fascinated me more. And from then on, I kind of just did all the reading I could, move on to my later 20s, and I got very ill and was on life support in a coma. And that is when I had a sort of a near-death experience, in which I recall it happened on Christmas, laying in my bed watching my relatives that had passed, holding, you know, my arms, singing Christmas carols and stuff like that around me. So again, it was a very comforting thing. So from that became born, I want to understand this more. I want to understand consciousness existing after death of our corporal form. And that's kind of where that's all born out of for me. So
And I think with my background, my parents were missionaries in Peru in the Amazon jungle when I was three.
Oh, wow.
And they were exposed to witch doctors, to a lot of, things that often, missionaries are trying to change the tribal people from worshiping what they worshiped. And they brought back artifacts that I think did affect our home. They also went to India and did some work with the Peace Corps and brought back artifacts that were also used in like cursing and other practices. And as I studied more, I really think that affected my home too, my childhood home. And so that's one other thing that I have also studied is like haunted objects or objects that might be cursed and have an effect in a home.
Oh, wow, that's fascinating. Both of you, would you say the difference in your childhood experiences came in some part, not in total, but in some part from the different like mindsets that were in your families at that time?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, definitely, because like attracts like, right? So it could even be that the mindset in Jen's family or the mindset intention put into the objects in her home attracted more negative things, whereas spirits were very welcome in my home. So it's possible I attracted more, familiar type. We attracted more familiar type hauntings because I really believe in it. We were in intention and energy. Like attracts like is the law of attraction, and there's just so many instances to prove that holds true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I sure. Certainly concur that if you go out looking for something scary, you're gonna find it, but if you go out looking for something good, you may find that as well, and that makes just a lot of sense to me. So when did you get into doing like full-on investigations? Was that in Florida or was that?
For me, it was after my father passed away and I moved to Florida. I really, when you lose somebody super close, it's like death smacks you in the face and you want answers. You want to know where they go. And so I really was set on a mission to discover more. And that's when a lot of the shows started coming out, like Ghost Adventures and some of the other ones that are on, and I really got intrigued by them and thought that makes sense to go in and try to prove things with equipment, with scientific stuff that can give you more answers. So I kind of reached out and I found a gentleman that was selling a lot of equipment online, and he has now passed away, and he was selling his stuff because he was dying of cancer. And he had a team in Michigan. And when he came down here, he still did some investigating with a couple of his friends. So when I bought all his equipment, he asked if he still could come along on some of my investigations. And I thought that'd be awesome because you could be my mentor because he did it for 20 some years.
Wow.
And because he was an atheist and I was brought up as a Christian, I really was intrigued on, okay, you're studying the paranormal, but yet you're an atheist. Why is that? What makes you, believe in what you believe? And I believe in what I believe. And instead of me judging him or him judging me, we formed an amazing friendship. And, whether he died still as an atheist, I'm not sure, but we really had a very close friendship before he passed. And he taught me a lot on investigating and properly using the equipment that I bought from him, and shared with me many of his experiences that he went through all his investigations. So I learned a lot from him.
So yeah. That's fascinating. Go ahead, please.
I was going to say, my experience is I'm like envious of Jen because my experience was very different, because when it came time to want to seriously investigate, I had to go through the route of doing a lot of the paid tourism investigations, which is, paying $200 to go for 3 hours into a haunted location. And it was frustrating because you get all sorts of different types of investigators leading the tours, and they have an incentive for the place to be haunted.
Oh, yes. They almost have to have something happen. You know, yeah. I mean, if you just walk through there and there's nothing going on and you've paid $200 to walk through an old house, there's not going to be a lot of repeat customers, you know?
So unless you just really want to believe that badly, at some point you got to go, look, all these places can't be haunted every day of the week. It's not possible.
That's it, you know?
Yeah. So that's kind of what, you know, when I was younger, when I lived near the old fort, I was also very into Wicca at the time. So I would go commune all the time. And it was a beautiful place to do that. It's by Lake Ontario. And it's kind of where I started talking to spirit. So, but I didn't have any equipment per se, but it was ritual and it was an investigation, minus the equipment. And then starting to use the equipment. My husband is from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is very close to Gettysburg. So when we would go visit his family, we started buying equipment and him and I would go out and do investigations, because Gettysburg is just an amazing place. If you're an investigator, you don't even have to have money to get in somewhere. You just go out to a field, you know, with your equipment.
I've heard so many things. I've never actually been to Gettysburg, but I've heard so many things of people having incredible experiences there that it almost, it just happens. I mean, you go there and it definitely happens. Wow. I just wanted to follow up with Jen, with the atheist paranormal investigator. Like, so he didn't believe in God or a God, but he believed in the human soul or something else.
Well, and I asked him quite a few times, like, you believe in spirits, but yet you don't believe in like a creator. And, you know, we never would get into arguments about it. It was more discussions. Mm-hmm. And he would say, the reason I investigate is because I don't believe, I want to believe into something. So I think he was searching. And, you know, I would always kid around with him like, well, okay, well, if you don't believe in like a higher power or a God, then what is your theory on how everything started or began? And of course, he was like, well, I kind of lean towards the Big Bang theory. And I said, well, that's great. And I've studied about the Big Bang theory, but who created the Big Bang theory? I mean, we always feel like there is a creator of something. And nothing comes from nothing. And so that really would make him think a lot. Like I would never, you know, discredit him or tell him he was wrong. And he didn't do the same with me. And we respected each other. And I feel like that's how Sarah is too. And I feel as investigators, you have to be open-minded. You have to allow people to believe in their truth. Because that we don't
makes a lot of sense. Oh, no.
You know,
exactly. So, that's why we're interested in this stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Cut and dry, exactly. Yes.
And he, the sad thing is, he said, well, from what I have researched and investigated, I feel like when you die, you are basically in darkness as a spirit, kind of wandering around aimlessly. And he said, that's pretty much all I've proven through my investigations, that yes, there is something after death, because I've talked to spirits who are very intelligent. They know my name. They can tell me things that have happened. And I have found out through research that they were telling the truth through like the spirit box and other things he used for equipment. And he said, but as far as, you know, where that is that they are, he's like, I have not proven that or figured that out yet. So he's on the other side now. So I kept telling him before he passed, you better come and give me some answers.
Why haven't we tried to reach out to him? Yeah, we have to do that, Jen.
Yes, we will.
Okay.
We will.
Okay.
That should be very interesting.
Yes.
Wow. And if I may follow up, Sarah, you were doing Wicca ritual in the fort from the war. I assume it was like probably the War of 1812.
Yep, it was. Yep.
Did you have some interesting experiences doing that, or?
We did. I did. And it sort of carried, it's funny because it sort of carried with me wherever I went, or, you know, I was talking about this with Jen earlier. It gets almost into the discussion of reincarnation, right? Because not only in the fort, but I also, you know, I spent a lot of time in England as a child. I had my dad's from Manchester. And I had quite a strong experience, actually, in York, England, in the castle, Old Castle Keep. And I was probably about 12 when I started doing this. And I think once you start doing ritual anywhere, it just opens you up, right? So the closer we are, the more open-minded we are, the more open we are. And I went there to, and as soon as I walked into the castle keep, I felt sick. And I felt like a movie just came into my head, like a full movie, like almost like how you would imagine an author downloads a story fully formed. I'm sure it doesn't actually happen that way. And I'm not a writer. So I went home and I wrote it and I gave it to my teacher. My teacher's like, wow, this is really good. I've always been a reader, but I am not a writer. So I think they were kind of shocked. And the story was entered into a contest and was eventually published. Wow. And it was basically about being inside the York Castle Keep in medieval times and eventually being burned alive.
Oh, wow.
And after it was published, you know, somebody reached out to my parents, because I'm a 12-year-old. I was not researching medieval English history.
Yes, yeah.
And apparently it actually happened. So when the Normans had brought Jewish people into England and they were not accepted, eventually they were rounded up into this castle keep. They managed to bar out the Normans, but before they were able, the mob was able to get in and kill them. The rabbi led everyone into a mass suicide.
Oh, wow.
And they burned the castle down so that their bodies could not be desecrated.
Wow.
Pretty horrific.
Yes, it's terrible. Also, that's an episode of I read some history, but I had not heard about
right.
it.
Right.
Wow, that is incredible.
Yeah, it's called York Castle's Keep. It's in York, England.
Wow. And obviously there's no way that like a seventh or eighth grader would be aware of that. You know, no, that wouldn't happen like that. That is a really incredible experience.
But like, wow. Jen and I were talking about before we came on with you, because we were, you know, talking about some things. Was that a past life experience? Were those past life experience that I was having in the fort, or were they psychic impressions?
Or,
you know,
was someone reaching out to you to say, tell our story,
right,
you know, from beyond, you know, from across the veil? I mean,
that's why we do this. We don't know.
Yes.
You know?
There are many unanswered questions here, to say the minimum.
Yeah.
So far, and there's nothing wrong with this, we could do this all evening, but so far we've only discussed ghosts or spirits that are the souls, and I'm, you know, these are not tightly defined words, but that are the beings who used to be living people.
Yes.
Do you investigate anything otherwise, like UFOs, Bigfoot? And there's no right or wrong answers. If that's your field of interest, then that's what you should do. But I just wondered, because paranormal covers
we discussed
a broad
that
range
too. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we're not interested in all that, because it's all fascinating, very fascinating. We just would not have the time to dedicate. I mean, that's why we're focusing on the paranormal and wanting to help people that are dealing with paranormal activity, because that takes up so much time in itself that we just wouldn't be able to concentrate on everything else and pour ourselves and our time and our energy into all that. But we love hearing about it. We love watching documentaries about it, you know, but it just time-wise, we just don't have AI all that time to do that. So,
I fully understand, especially if you're actually out there in the field interacting with people. And everybody's only got 24 hours in a day. I fully can understand that one. Please kind of elaborate for our listeners on people contact you when they're encountering things that scare them or bother them, or they feel they have something going on in their house, or will you tell me?
Well, it's interesting because you brought up the UFOs and other things, because in my past with different groups that I have worked with, we have had other people who, I even had a gentleman who said he felt he had like these little people or elves surrounding his house every night and driving him crazy. He thought he was literally going crazy in his head, you know, and he wanted us to come and see if we could see them too. Unfortunately, we have to pick and choose, like, okay, is that in our field of study? Is that something that we want to, you know, further go and investigate? We've had recently, we had a woman who reached out who, through talking to her and her sending me videos and pictures, she really felt like she was possessed by an entity that was attacking her, especially through the night. And she was seeing actual letters forming on her body. And, you know, as I talked to her more and more, I couldn't tell if it was more like a mental illness or that she was really being possessed by something. I mean, I really felt that in her situation, it was beyond our expertise as far as, so we really have to really ask a lot of questions, be very sympathetic with people, because people will get offended if we say, I'm sorry, you know, so we have to be careful with that, because there's so many different things out there that people are battling or dealing with that we have to really ask so many questions and break it down. But for example, we had a home that we went out to. They were having super loud bangs around 2 or 3 in the morning, and they were catching it on their video, a home video. They had videos set up inside their home, and we could hear the bam, bam, bam at like 3 in the morning on the interior doors. Objects were flying through the room, and they had little children who were just terrified. The mother was taking the children out of the home at night to sleep at her parents' because she couldn't even stay in there anymore. So we did go out with my past group before Sarah joined our group, and we did set up an investigation. We did catch some things on like the REM pod, which is the round machine that has a little antenna, and if energy comes around it, it'll set it off and it'll like beep and lights will come on. Now if we as people go near it and touch it, it'll go off because we have our own energy around us. But only spirits or entities that go near it can set it off. It can't just be set off by the air. And that was going off. And it would go off in rooms that we would walk out of. It wouldn't do it while we were in the room, which was interesting. It was almost cowardly. Like we would leave the room and all of a sudden the machines would start going off. And as soon as we'd go back in the room, it would be dead silence. So we really felt like whether this was, you know, a not very nice entity, that it was really almost harassing the people, like it wanted the people out of the house. And I did a lot of history of the area before we enter a home to find out if there's been a murder or a suicide or, you know, maybe a death on the property. And come to find out 6 months before, they found a woman's head in the front lawn of the neighbor. And I called the police. This was in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I called the police and they said they still have not found who murdered that woman and decapitated her head. So it was still unsolved. Uh-huh. And it just kind of like really connected with me that, okay, here's a woman's head. And this is when it all started happening in their home. Now, does that mean that this woman's trying to give a message, or is it the evilness of what happened to her has filtrated their home? That's why we try to study and figure out what's going on. But they also told us that they had a lady staying with them that was basically living on their couch, and they had asked her to leave because she wasn't helping with rent. She was just feeding off of them. And just before she left, she practiced Santeria, and she cursed the family.
Oh, wow.
And she told them that she had cursed them for kicking her out. And they said that's when things started. So it could be a combination of all of that. But when we left them and we followed up with them, it wasn't getting any better. And so we were honest with them to say, you know, it's best if you, they were renting the home, that you leave the home. Like this isn't going to leave. And it was really terrifying the family. And the wife even said when she would get up in the middle of the night because she felt uneasy, she would start reading her Bible and things would just escalate all of a sudden, and things would start banging even louder, and things would start, the lights would turn on and off, and they had proof. They had video proof of it. So there is times when we can't solve it for the people, and that's frustrating, but we can give them advice. And in that case, we really told them it'd probably be better to find a new place to live.
And see where you think this team will be different is that I would like to, if those people moved, go back and investigate that house again.
I was going to ask
I would definitely, and Jen and I have talked about this. If someone reaches out to us with trouble, you try to provide the immediate solution for their safety because that is the primary thing you need to be worried about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As far as the research perspective, because FPI's ultimate goal is to teach, right? We want people to understand and not be afraid. So I would go back. I would go back after they moved out, and I would see if that continued. I don't know if I mentioned this or it's on the website, but I'm currently studying parapsychology and paranormal studies. Eventually would like to get my doctorate in parapsychology philosophy. So it interests me with the woman that was staying on the couch, how much of that might have been an egregore or some type of energy. And I feel like we've come across that a couple times. So I think several experiments need to be run to come up with a full synopsis. And the experience I had with the team Jen's talking about, I'll touch a base about that a little bit.
Yes, please.
It was disheartening because we did go into a residence. It was an elderly couple living with their adult son. And Jen and I picked up on it, although we were not supposedly the clairvoyant of the group, immediately that they were having a lot of negative energies and things, and they believed it was coming from a painting. It was the sun. Jen and I picked up on it immediately, that it was attached to him. You could feel it off of him. But we did the investigations, and again, we placed REM pods, and every time he walked away from his bedroom, which is where the activity, ironically, was focused, he had thrifted probably over 1,200 action figures and toys that were in his bedroom. Wow. It was packed. Wall-to-wall shelves, like literally covered. Just a little nook where he slept. And whatever was in there was angry. And it didn't like Jen and I. It did not like women at all. And so in that instance, the homeowners and the son had insisted that they stay during the investigation, which is usually not best practice. It's best practice to usually have an information session with the homeowner, listen to their story, and then have them leave. I think what had it, what that's what nailed it down for me was a couple of things. Jen and I have state-of-the-art equipment. We have all the equipment that you see on the TV shows. What we will never do is fake evidence, or not even downright fake, but even manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out that an app was being used connected to a spirit box, not necessarily to make the spirit box say something, but to change the tone of the voice. And even I, as the investigator, was not aware that the person controlling the spirit box was making the voice sound demonic with their phone.
And that taints what you're trying to do. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but there's two 80-year-old people there listening to this in their home. Can you imagine how they felt after we left? And oh, we never reviewed evidence. Yep. We never reviewed evidence and we never returned. And as far as I know, we never gave them an answer. And if FBI would insist on investigating that house again, empty, and give those people an answer, even if it was difficult to hear, I think gut feeling he needed to clear that room out and he needed to do some own cleansing on himself. But I would not leave letting an elderly couple believe there is a demonic spirit in their home because it's too hard to tell them that, you know, maybe there is some anger issues going on with their son. Maybe it would have been nice to talk to them without him there and ask them if they were okay. But John and I can't do anything because we both signed contracts and that was not our case. So it hurts me that they are out there.
Well, isn't there?
There's a lot of people out there like that. There is a lot. John's correct. I'd say that's most of the teams.
Even the teams that are on TV.
Yeah.
I assume they're probably worse. Yes.
Yeah. They want publicity. They want entertainment.
So yes. We have not had a lot of cases enough together. But yes, we will come to your home. We want to help. And those are examples of things that we will not do. Mm-hmm. What we will do is listen. What we will do is engage. We'll listen to homeowners. We'll listen to spirit. We'll listen to each other. Mm-hmm. And we'll listen to the science. And we will try to debunk every single thing before we tell you that is paranormal. Mm-hmm.
That seems like a really great approach to take, you know, I mean, to kind of, you know, eliminate every other possibility, the bad wiring, the bad plumbing, you know, the neighbors stuff filtering over, all that sort of thing.
Right.
You mentioned it a couple times. What kind of equipment do you use? I mean, relatively briefly speaking.
Well, we have the SLS camera, mm-hmm. which I'm sure you've seen on some of the shows, where it shows a stick figure. Mm-hmm. And I had a great experience with the SLS as part being scientifically proven. I went with Vic that passed away. We went to a home in North Carolina. A friend of mine bought a log home that was built in the 1800s. She was opening it up as a bed and breakfast. She wanted us to come investigate it because she just felt there might be some presence in it. She did leave for the night. She didn't tell us any history of it, like if anyone died in there or anything. Because a lot of times you want to get a clear slate. You want to go in maybe not knowing everything because you can make your own assumptions instead of forming opinions.
Yeah.
And every time we go into the downstairs bathroom and point the SLS camera at the toilet and lift the top lid, a person would be sitting on it and a hand would even go over and touch the toilet paper roll. I mean, it was so amazing. And it happened for like over 4 hours. We'd go investigate other rooms. We'd come back, lift up the seat, and there's the person sitting there again.
Yeah.
So when we were all done with the investigation, we told her our findings. She asked if the previous owner's daughter could come talk to us because her parents lived there for many years. When we told her about the person sitting on the toilet, she started to cry and she said, that's where her father passed away.
Oh, wow.
On the toilet, sitting on the toilet. They found him deceased on the toilet. Amazing evidence. I had chills. I was like, wow. And does that mean he's still sitting on the toilet? I personally, from my experience and just what I've studied and researched, no. I feel like that is that residual energy that often teams that have investigated for years talk about. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a record that keeps going over and over again. It's like that's where a lot of energy was placed because he passed away right there. And so it's kind of playing that back over and over again. So no, I don't believe her father's still sitting on the toilet. I just feel like that's his energy when he left, his body. That's where that energy was left. But it's amazing. So that's a very awesome piece of equipment. We have the REM pod.
And that's, if I might just put in for a second, and that's a really great example of the lingering energy. There's no way that a human spirit is still on the toilet, you know,
years later. Toilet.
You know, that makes no sense. But is the residual energy? Yeah, I could totally see that being the case. That makes a lot of sense to me. Please, go ahead.
Yeah, we have REM pods. We have, John and I are both very interested in EVP. So we have several spirit boxes. We have all different EVP recorders. Gemma just told me about an experiment she saw, because we are going to love our experiments, where you put walkie-talkies in different rooms with a different EVP recorder next to all of them, and you speak, you ask questions from outside the home through all the walkie-talkies, because you might catch an EVP on just one. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to trying that. We've got, you know, the K2s, the EMS, pretty much we have, you know, anything you would see on the shows. But just to tell you a quick little story about equipment. So Jen and I go to our local cemetery, Spring Hill Cemetery. We have one piece of equipment with working batteries on us, and that is a REM pod. We were not prepared to do an investigation that day. So we go into a cemetery with just a REM pod, Jen and I. I have the best yes-no conversation with a spirit I have ever had.
Wow.
We put the REM pod down just in the central place and start walking around, because we were just kind of trying to get the lay of the land and take notes. Every time we'd walk away, that REM pod went off. Every time we came back, it would stop. Every time we walk away, it would go off again. Then we would come back, it stopped. Eventually, we went back, we looked at her name, and we asked her if she, we're like, are you trying to communicate with us? Just, you know, set that off again if you are. Goes off. We probably had, I don't know how long that went on for. A
few hours, at least.
Yeah. Conversation with this wonderful, you know, woman. And all we had with us was Jen I and a REM pod. So, you know, sometimes
luck. the simplest stuff, like tennis balls, for example. You put a tennis ball. I own a Airbnb cottage on Weekiwachee, which holds a lot of history in Florida. The Native Indians believed it had magic powers, because Weekiwachee Springs is from the ground, you know, natural springs up from the ground. It's 99.9% clean, pure. And so the Indians would bathe in it for healing powers. And we purchased this home that was built in the late 60s, but it was one of the first by this river. And we set tennis balls up on the top of the landing of the stairs, because it has an upstairs, and constantly those tennis balls are thrown down the stairs by a spirit. So sometimes you can use the simplest devices, or, you know, like a simple flashlight, you know, just to have it turned off and ask them to turn it off.
Best tool right here, right?
Yes. So it doesn't always have to be the highest tech equipment. It can be just simple things like a flashlight and a tennis ball.
Ingenuity. Wow.
Yes, indeed. Have either of you, what's your thoughts on Ouija boards?
Oof, Jen, you have to take this
one. Ouija boards. I was always told when I was 7, I had a very bad experience. I went to a birthday party, overnight birthday party, at a little girl's, first time I ever was allowed to sleep over somewhere. And this mother, unbeknownst to my Christian parents, was a practicing witch. And she brought out a Ouija board for us girls to play. I'll never forget, as a 7-year-old, watching that planchetta move by itself. Nobody touched it. And this woman is chanting things that I'm like in my mind thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to burn in hell when my parents find out about this. So when I went home the next day, I knew I had to confess to them, like, this is what happened. I couldn't believe it was happening. And they made me go back with them, and they made this lady burn the Ouija board in front of me, which I don't think was a positive thing to do at the time.
I've heard you shouldn't really do that.
My parents were thinking, you know, destroy this so my daughter isn't cursed for the rest of her life. But I feel Ouija board was one of the very simplest first tools back then that they used to try to communicate with the paranormal. I mean, it's not any different than the spirit boxes we use now, right, or any of the other devices. If it's used improperly, then it can cause issues for people. And, you know, we've all heard horror stories by people who've had bad experiences, because like anything, it could open that door to the other side. And are you going to use it in a good way, or are you going to use it in a negative way? And that's the choice that you really have to make. So you do have to be careful when you use the different equipment that you use, because you are playing with things that may be stronger than ourselves,
you know,
a little more power,
I agree with Jen, and I have a little bit of a different, I feel like, or maybe the same view, Jen, you tell me. If you study parapsychology, right, they would tell you that the Ouija board itself, the pendulum, even the spirit box, isn't physically being manipulated by the spirit, right? There's a human telepathic aspect to that. So, you know, Auerbach holds, like anybody who studied parapsychology would say, there is no difference between these items, because they are just the tarot card, the pendulum, the Ouija board, the spirit box. They are just a medium between spirit and us. So if we're not powerful enough as a clairvoyant to speak directly to spirit, it's a way for us to open ourselves up. But, you know, maybe we are telepathically moving the planchette. The spirit is talking to me or to Jen, and we're telepathically moving the planchette. So really the intention is coming through us. So whatever intention you have, whatever is inside you is going to come out. Because I've, you know, I'm really big into, Jen's going to teach me how to read tarot cards. She reads tarot cards. Because I just feel that would be a good medium for us to tap into.
I don't
into
have
what's
a lot of,
there.
Lot of experience with tarot, but what I have has been absolutely fascinating. And
right.
Managed to, like, I've, well, okay, in my life I've had like one actual reading, but this was a complete stranger that I had never met before and was able to tell me what was going on in my life flawlessly.
They are amazing. Yeah.
And
I've had people cry when I've done their,
you know,
readings.
With no way of being able to access that information, you know. So it was very impressive to me. Would either of you or both of you, do you consider yourselves mediums?
I would consider us.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
We definitely don't like to go around. And you know how some people, that's the first thing they want to tell you. Like, I'm an empath, I'm a medium, you know, and it's more like, look at me, look at me, look at me. Where we know we have the ability, we know we are, but that's not something we want to wear on our shirts. Like, it's something
Certainly.
That it's a gift. And we want to be humble about it. We don't want to be boisterous and like, yes, but yes.
Yeah.
I think that's drawn us together.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. It absolutely, this was meant to be like, this is a partnership that's going to do great things. And we have not been together very long, but it was like, you know, when lightning strikes, because I think Jen and I have a complementary type of second sight. And for myself, I'm still learning and practicing that. I know that it's there. I have been afraid of it. And like you, I think you mentioned earlier, a lot of my life, I've been told that I am crazy, which I think a lot of people with gifts experience. And
some of us who are not psychically gifted either, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I wonder now where I would be if I hadn't been reported to the Catholic priest for practicing Wicca and I had continued studying my clairvoyance. And I'm getting there.
Sorry, can I just hear that story?
Well, that's the best story. Yes, you can. So I had taken a bike trip through New England for my 12th birthday. It was like a camping bike trip. I think my parents just wanted to get rid of me. So we went through Salem, and I felt like I was at home. I was like, because of all the witches there, you know, it was less commercialized. I don't want to date myself, but it was a while ago. And so I bought books. I came home and, you know, I was reading the books. And like I said before, it was going out into nature and going out to the forest and going out to the fort and other places where I felt connected and grounded. And I was doing ritual, which is basically at that time, you know, candles and meditate. It's no different than meditation. It's really not. Mm-hmm. It's just different words. So I had lent a book to my best friend who also liked doing these things with me. And her parents sound a lot like Jen's parents, or Jen says about them. And she reported us to the local Catholic church in my town. And they came to my house and told my parents that they had to give them the books.
That seems like a really bold move in modern day America.
I know.
Did you go to Catholic school or like?
I did go to Catholic school.
Like under the auspices of that is how they showed up or what?
Yeah, but these were not even priests related to my school. This was totally different. Because her and I didn't go to the same school.
Uh-huh.
It's just funny because they came to the wrong house because my dad is actually an atheist and my parents are hippies. I'm like, oh, you're going to tell me what my kid can read?
It's tough to imagine how that went down, but that's fascinating. Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I did get ostracized.
The Inquisition shows up, basically.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, have you seen Monty Python?
Yes, I was thinking, nobody expects
this is the comfy chair, Inquisition. Yes. We are the Inquisition. And, yeah, I mean, but I did get ostracized. The word got out there, I lost a lot of friends, and I think that made me kind of pull back.
Yes. I can see, certainly, especially at that age, how that would be a really negative experience, yeah.
I was a theater kid, so like, oh, the theater kid's a witch now, too. Yeah.
I have a feeling that there's a huge crossover between those two worlds. In all,
you're probably right.
Let me see. Where am I? I, as you well know, I sent you some questions here, but I didn't. You know, it's not written in stone. It's barely written on paper.
Okay, we're having fun, Rachel.
Oh yes, this is
for sure.
This is what I like to do. You know.
Yes.
You mentioned having a request from a person who was seeing, well, like say gnomes or, mm-hmm. you know, little people, the fae folk. Was that a one-time experience or have you had other people talk about that or have you had any experience in that area?
I think he was my most, like he was so sincere and so wanting when I met him at his house, because I was actually purchasing an old Ouija board that he had, and he wanted me to come investigate his home, and he was begging me. He sent me some videos, which I did see some orbs around to outside that he caught on his outside camera, but he was saying like they would bang on the outside of his house all night. They would make his like outside lights come on. He would actually see them darting around in his backyard. I don't think, it's not that I didn't believe him. I just felt uneasy. Like I didn't feel at the time that I felt like it was a safe place for, and I wasn't really with the other group that I was with Sarah yet. At the time I was just with Vic and he was going through chemo and stuff. And so it wasn't a time for me to investigate. And we really didn't get into investigating like, you know, elves or whatever. If he kept saying they were either like elves or little demons, he was like, they were like this, you know, they were like little tiny, looking things that would dart around in his backyard and just harass him every night, and he was not getting sleep. And he was actually in the process of moving out. Mama. So, and he was kind of warning me because he was getting rid of anything he thought might have caused them to come, which one thing was his Ouija board. And so, you know, he even was trying to get me to go into his home. And I was just like, I really have to get going. I felt very uneasy.
That's probably a feeling you want to go with. Oh, man.
I was trying to get out of there so quick, I ran into his mailbox.
Okay, we're talking about a woman who tried to get me to roll down the window and talk to a possible brother of a serial killer out the window. So she doesn't scare easily.
I don't scare easily. I do usually carry my gun with me. But we do have a family in our town that is a notorious serial killer. He and his brother have killed women from California all the way to Spring Hill, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
They have uncovered
at least
four bodies, and this is maybe 5 miles from my house.
The Mansfields. There's a couple documentaries
on them. Very evil family. Like, Sarah and I started researching the family, and a lot of the women that were associated with the family, like wives and stuff, have died for unexplained reasons in their 30s and 40s. And just the horrific things that they have done to these women. Like, so one of the ladies that was dug up had her hands and feet tied to her back, and she had rope around her neck, and it was underneath their home. They had to break apart the floor, and they found her underneath the home where the pipes were. I mean, just horrific stuff. So we drove by the house one day.
As one does.
And they one of them was backing out of the driveway on a tractor. And I'm like, Sarah,
talk to him.
How he's related. Because he looked like one of the relatives. He looked like one of them, yes.
I mean, she says driving by the house. I think it was more like creeping around the house to see if we get onto the property to do a paranormal investigation, which was not advisable in this neighborhood. But I think at some point, we're still going to probably try to figure out how to do that. It's fenced. And Jen and I truly believe that there are probably more bodies there. And maybe there are women that are still missing that nobody knows their names. So we really love to, obviously, as a sisterhood, figure out a way to get enough to do an investigation to see if possibly we can get some more names. Because I'm sure there's missing women.
Wow.
Buried there. Yeah.
Did the other brother, is he in prison or was this
Because he testified against his brother, who is in prison.
He is
out still living on the property. But in all the documentaries and articles we read, he was with the brother every time these girls would go missing. And so it's like the police know he was connected, but they couldn't prove without a shadow of a doubt. So he testified against his own brother in order to stay out of prison. But the nephew was the one who recently, 3 years ago, because he got picked up for drugs, had said that there's more bodies on the property.
Their brother's father was also a serial killer.
Yes.
Who had gone to jail.
Wow. So a multi-generational.
It's just a family, very just evilness.
It's like 5 to 10 acres, and the entire family lives on the property in some type of trailer.
It's like a compound.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. And you just got to think of the mind state that you can have to go home and go to sleep, and there's people you killed like a couple feet away. Yeah. I mean, that's some John Wayne Gacy level mentality. You know, that wow. That is
Have you seen Making a Murderer?
Yes, I have.
It looks a lot like that. Mm-hmm. It looks a lot like that. In fact, there is even a junkyard on the property as well.
Oh wow. And that happened in Wisconsin. I'm actually quite familiar with that case. Yes. And to digress only slightly, in that case, I think the nephew was completely innocent. I don't think he had anything to do with anything.
I think he just is an eyewitness, and from what he's heard through the family, he knows what has happened.
Yeah.
Kind of second or third hand, yeah. As far as the main perpetrator, I kind of think that he did that, and that he felt that I served 18 years for a crime I didn't commit. They owe me one, and I'm going to go do this horrible thing. And that was the impression I got. But wow, this is way more bizarre than that. I mean, this is what you're talking about is multi-generations, almost like a cult of serial killers. And, you know, only some of which have ever been prosecuted. That's heavy. Because,
you know, their victims were mostly sex workers. You know, unfortunately, the vulnerable are victimized and you know, people stop looking for them.
But there was a KOA campgrounds in Brooksville, which is near us, a town right next to ours, that they had gone to the campgrounds, kidnapped. I don't remember. The girl was young. She was like 13, 14 years old in the middle of the night, and they murdered her. I mean, she was an innocent girl camping with her family, and they just went onto the campgrounds one evening and kidnapped her and killed her. So they're a very evil family.
The point being, FBI is involved, where no one has also asked us to be involved as well. As where people ask us to be involved.
We can help say
if we can help at someone somewhere.
Cold cases, we will do that too.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that. That do you sometimes get involved in like assisting investigations of crimes from, and I mean, psychic is kind of a term for what you have, right?
Well, for example, I have found remains in the Spring Hill Cemetery, and I had to call the police. And it was weird because I was with a couple of my other friends before I met Sarah, who would like to go once in a while to investigate with me. So we went one evening to the cemetery because it has so much history. And I had noticed it was gated off from the road, which it usually isn't. You have to go drive through this creepy woods to get to it because it's a very old cemetery. And we had set up some of our equipment, and I said, oh my goodness, I have to take a leak. I'll be right back. And I went behind a big, huge pine tree, and I had this overwhelming feeling that there was somebody in the pine tree staring at me. It was the weirdest feeling in the world. So after I did my business, I quick got up and was looking underneath the pine tree. And all of a sudden I see this old pieces of black garbage bag sticking out of the ground. So I started poking it with a stick, and there was bones in it. So my girlfriend who was with me just happened to be an RN. I said, you need to come over and check this out and let me know if this looks like human bones. And as we further looked, there was bones scattered all over under the tree. And she said, yes, those look like a rib bone. That looks like a femur. So we had to call the police. Before we knew it, there was 8 cop cars and forensics down there. He said that this is the second human remains in the last month within less than a 5-mile radius that they uncovered. So I really feel like Florida is a hotbed for just serial killers, murders that just go unsolved. And it's very sad. Like, there was just such a sadness that night that, you know, I really felt I was meant to find the remains that night. And, you know, the cops said, you know, it's probably not too safe for you guys to keep coming out here.
So we went back, of course.
We went during the
rally again next week.
it draws us for some reason.
To answer your question, we have not yet been asked to by the authorities, but I think we're kind of heading in that direction of taking it upon ourselves when we have the time, if we don't have a residential case. To definitely kind of maybe do some of those things. And if we can match up research with some evidence, we will definitely hand it over to the authorities. Absolutely. And
it would seem, and I'm just speculating here, but it almost seemed like the spirit of that dead woman, like, reached out.
Oh, like, definitely.
Wanted you to find.
Definitely.
Wanted, like, she wanted justice.
Of a puzzle. You know? Right. Why in the world did I pick that tree to go over and do some business and then have that overwhelming feeling like somebody's staring at me under that tree? Like, I just couldn't even. And then to find the bones, it was just crazy. And I really hope that they solve Because there was like a old pink, when they started digging through, there was an old pink bra ripped apart.
Wasn't it still there when we went back? Yes. So forensics didn't even take that.
No, they took most of the bones, but.
When her and I went back, the garbage bag and the pink undergarments were still there.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible. That would be all swept up as evidence, yes, and sort out what you don't need later, but grab everything at the time would seem to be. Yeah, wow, that is really.
I really got a sense from the officers that I spoke with, because they wanted to video like interview me, that they're so overwhelmed. Like, they just have so many cases that are so unsolved that I think they're just completely overwhelmed.
That would not surprise me. I happen to live in Milwaukee, and you know, the murders, it all too often. It's not that anybody's life isn't as valuable as somebody else's life, but everybody remembers Jeffrey Dahmer, and last year they had, you know, quite a bit of coverage because that Netflix series came out,
right?
And which it was okay. If you've never heard of Dahmer, I guess that'd be good enough. They, for some reason, gave him a North Minnesota accent that we don't actually have here. And I could pick holes in that all day. But the police are often overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And people forget that right after Jeffrey Dahmer was caught and had trial and sentenced and all that, he got a ton of attention because he did weird things with the bodies. But there were two other serial killers who were operating in Milwaukee at the same time, and they killed mostly Black female sex workers, and they were eventually caught, but they killed like 46 people. I mean, it was insane. And, you know, then the police chief and the DA were toasting each other. They caught these guys, but, you know, it was too little too late, to say the minimum, you know, and often without somebody advocating for them, crime victims are often just kind of disappear. You know, that happens more than people think.
Oh, yes. You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
So,
I have another interesting paranormal story real quick to please. Share with you.
Yes, yes.
When we moved into our home here in Florida 9 years ago, there was a cross. Our home was abandoned for a year due to foreclosure back when all the housing market was crashing and people were being pushed out of their homes. And so we bought our house unseen online in New York,
and that moved was a down bold here. Move. Not even,
we did not know the area. We did not see the house. So we just knew it was the size we wanted and it had 5 acres. And so whatever condition it was in, my husband does construction. Anyways, we moved in, everything was torn out of the inside of the home. It was bare. The doors were all boarded up. And there was a cross right across from our driveway. There was a woods and there was a cross in the ground. So we knew down here in Florida, there's crosses everywhere. And it means somebody had died on the road, whether they were walking or in a car accident. So I didn't think much of it. My kids just asked, do you think somebody died there? I said, yeah, there probably was a car accident. And it's a real quieter road. It's not a main street. So my one daughter, who's very clairvoyant, she has been since she was a little girl, she's 16 when we moved in, started having paranormal stuff happening in her bedroom. Like, we had this huge picture she had levitate off the wall and end up on the other side of her room, set down onto the ground right in front of her face.
Wow.
She has gotten used to these things over the years, but being in a new home, she said, Mom, things are starting to happen. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, just write these things down. We'll try to figure out what's going on. Well, one night everybody was in bed. It was probably close to midnight. And I was just doing some picking stuff up in the kitchen. And there was this loud crash in our home, like a cabinet had fallen over and glass broke. Everybody woke up. My husband came running out. He was like, what was that? Nothing. We could find nothing that caused that huge noise in the house. So this started continuing with these loud bangs in the middle of the night that would wake us up. Then I started getting my sheets pulled off of me in the middle of the night. And then when it'd wake me up, it would like yank on the bottom of my feet.
Oh, hell no.
So I decided to start setting up my equipment and I started asking questions like, who is this? What do you want? You know? And it was never like, we weren't afraid. It was almost just like, I'm trying to get your attention. And we got Gary. Gary kept coming through saying, Gary, in a young man's voice. And so I'm like, okay, well, Gary, what do you want? You know? And he would just say things like, he would say a word like accident would come through the spirit box. And I'd write these things down and I just kept a journal like, well, and one night I got up and I was walking through the house. I was getting a glass of water and it was probably 1 in the morning and I heard my name, Jen. And I looked around, everybody was sleeping and I'm like, okay, what's going on here? Then I heard Jen again. 3 times I heard my name. So I knew he was trying to call out. So I started researching. Come to find out, a 16-year-old boy was in the back of a pickup and this 18-year-old was driving and there was other kids in the back of the pickup and they had been partying and it was in the 80s and they were going down, which used to be a dirt road, which was in front of our home. Our home hadn't even been built yet. He had fallen out of the back of the truck and hit his head and the kid was driving so fast. He died immediately and the kids were scared. So they put him in the back of the truck, went down the road to where the grandparents had lived and continued to party. And in the morning, they finally took him to the hospital. Well, he had been dead. And that's all I found in this news article. I didn't have any names of like who was driving or anything. Well, I told my daughter because she was 16 at the time, so it started to make sense to me. So we hung bells around the house. And I said, Gary, if you'd like to get our attention in the middle of the night, please ring the bells. And we have a special needs daughter. And she would tell me every morning, Gary was ringing the bells again last night. Like she's an innocent child. She's older, but her brain functions like a child. So I'm like, well, at least he's not waking us all up making mm-hmm. loud noises. Well, then one day I see a lady out putting flowers by the cross. So I go out to her and I said, did you know Gary? And she said, well, yes, unfortunately. Oh, and before that, my friend came over, Vic, to do an investigation. And he asked Gary, who was driving the truck? And he said, Michael. The woman said, my son, Michael, was the driver and he's doing time in prison for Gary's death. Like wow. All of this just came together. That's what paranormal investigating is all about.
Yep.
And
chills, Jen.
Gary still will visit us now and again and do things like rock a table. He's rocked little end tables for us and stuff like that. But he doesn't bang and scare the kids anymore at night. And things have settled down. Like, I think he's just comfortable now with us. And now that we know what happened to him, it settled him one way or another. But that's what really gets us to investigate, yeah. to find these answers and why things are happening. But this is what makes me get into it more and more. And I'm so excited with Sarah to just help other people find these kind of things out, what's going on in their homes. And it's great when the puzzle comes together.
That is really fascinating. And you would think that he found some kind of peace and was able to go forward in his own way, whatever that may be. That is really interesting. Wow.
You really just find that, like I said earlier, they want to be listened to and you just have to take the time to listen to them. And a lot of times I think those loud bangs or even the slamming open of a door, spirit's not trying to scare you. They're just trying to get your attention. And maybe they overshoot the mark and they slam the door open too loud or they make the noise bang too loud. But like Jen's got the right idea. They're people. Just talk to them. Here's what you can do. Here's what you can't do.
Right.
Yeah.
That
reminds me. He died in such a traumatic way, you know? Mm-hmm. And because my daughter was his same age, I think he was really trying to connect to her because she was his age at the time he died.
Yeah.
So I think he was connecting and she's clairvoyant. And so I think he was like, I think you
can hear me.
No, I'm here. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. And she acknowledged him and she knew.
Wow.
As far as the loud noises, that is something I definitely experienced myself and I didn't think for a moment about anything paranormal. I thought there was somebody in my house. I came home from work at a time when nobody else was home and heard really loud banging and walking around on the second floor. Well, I wasn't thinking about spirits. I was thinking about some dudes broke in my house, okay? And I'm coming up, gun in hand, coming up, clearing the room, and there's nobody there. There's nobody there, and there's no way somebody could have left. And it's just nothing. There's nothing's even moved around. And it's like, but something was happening. And something That was a different house than we live in now, and a lot happened there that was very strange. But I wasn't even thinking in those terms. I literally was expecting a burglar, and just nobody there, and no way they could have left. So it's that's when that happens. It can be very weird, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Oh yeah, I think it messes with people's psyche, especially people that don't necessarily believe in the paranormal or even think that this might be paranormal. And they almost, I've heard it in people's voices, like they feel like, am I going crazy? Is there something wrong with me? And that, and that's when you can help them understand better and know you're not going crazy. And there is paranormal activity out there. And that could be what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And I would never deny the reality of mental illness. And that some people do have auditory hallucinations, visual hallucinations, delusions. But I wonder, you kind of got to balance it. How many people are diagnosed with those things who really had something outside contact them?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Who have latent psychic abilities or an openness that other people don't have and are diagnosed under the wrong circumstances as having schizophrenia or having delusions, that doesn't mean schizophrenia doesn't exist. Some people definitely have that.
Yeah,
right. But, I totally agree. Yes.
You know, there's different ways of interpreting these things sometimes. And I think sometimes people who are receiving legitimate messages get maybe tossed in with those who are having a medical condition. And it may even be a more of a gray area than science can accept. Because, you know, if you tell your psychiatrist that your late grandmother appears to you as an apparition and talks with you about stuff that's going on, that may not go the best. You know, that may be taken, depending on, I've had some doctors over the years, and some can fully accept that, yes, that type of thing happens sometimes. Others might give you some heavy medication or even decide that you're at risk, you know? So
if I can just, build on that a little bit, because what you're saying is so interesting to me, because I'm very interested in psychology. Obviously, if I'm interested in parapsychology, I'm interested in psychology because there is the same thing. But I think that part of where it becomes people being misdiagnosed is because maybe they run aside each other when it comes to things like trauma. And I'm very interested in how trauma affects our psychic abilities. I think that in my own experience, in my own life, my traumas have made me closer to the other side. And in some people, I think that it opens up your mind to some sort of empathy that is only accessible through extraordinary pain. So if I go to a psychiatrist and they know my history of trauma, and I'm saying that I'm being comforted by my grandparents, because I was very, as a teenager, my grandparents both came to me very often to comfort me. They're going to say that I'm having trauma-induced hallucinations or that I have mental illness born out of trauma. But I think that where the trauma in the mental health field gets us, they need to be put on medication, I also think that it greatly enhances your risk, your likelihood, I should say, of being clairvoyant. It can make you a seeker, and it can make you very open.
That makes a lot of sense.
And to elaborate on that, I have my bachelor's in psychology, and I have studied a lot because I've adopted 8 children who have had severe mental illness and had different handicaps. And sometimes I feel like that can intertwine with paranormal. It's not necessarily that they might be schizophrenic, but that might, like she said, open them up more to the paranormal world. And so it has to be a really good psychologist to untwine that difference and not just accuse them of being mentally ill and, you know, not really seeing their grandparent. It might be both.
Yes.
And it could be both.
Yes.
Very well said. Exactly. It's not an either or.
Exactly.
Going to be a lot of gray area there.
Yes.
And for obvious reasons, I won't mention who I'm talking about by name, but I have, and I make no secret of this, I have dealt with severe PTSD for many years. I was in the military, and that's a, you know, long story. I was in Somalia, and a lot of things happened, and anyway, I have been treated by a really excellent psychologist through the VA. And at one point, not at the house we live at now, but our previous house, things were disappearing and reappearing. And that was just more and more disturbing to me, because there were things that, like, I just set that down and now it's gone.
Right.
And then I start to look around for it, and I spend 10 minutes looking around for it, and it's back at a place I've already looked 5 times. You know, I took to locking up certain objects in a lockbox, which included, for some reason, the black pepper seasoning. That was just disappearing all the time. So I had to put it in a lockbox so I could get it out when I wanted it. It was crazy. And I told my psychologist about it, and this is when she really, you know, went up a level in my appreciation. She is of Middle Eastern background. And she said, "No, these things, you know, you may be misplacing objects, but I know what my grandmother would say." And she would say it was probably the jinn. And I was like, yes, yeah, okay, yep. You get me. You get where I'm coming from. You get why this is disturbing to me.
Yeah.
I'm not being that forgetful. Something's moving this stuff. And she says, yeah, the jinn do that sometimes, you know?
I believe that too. Whether it's a jinn or a spiritual being that likes to be a prankster, mean, spirits they have personalities of their own. And I really truly believe that there is spirits that just like to, you know, yank your chain. And maybe it was somebody who lived there before that was a big jokester. It was like, man, I'm going to get this guy and I'm going to move his stuff around.
Right.
You know,
it was never vicious. And it was never like,
right.
If they wanted to hurt us, they
you know, yeah.
could have killed us or something. That wasn't, but there was definitely, and I even developed a little ritual where I didn't feel comfortable talking to the entity. I grew up in the middle of the satanic panic, and, you know, talking to entities, you know, I found not something I was comfortable with at all. I've started to loosen up as I've gotten to know more people, especially people like yourselves who do this type of thing.
Right.
You know, they didn't get dragged to hell or whatever. So it's cool, you know, but, I did a third person type of communication where I just say, it'd be really nice if you'd return the pepper. If we could have the pepper back, I'd really appreciate that. Uh-huh. And bing, the pepper's back. Bing, the remote control's back. You know, and I'd go in the other room and quietly say this little thing, and bam, often the results were instant. And in a way that, you know, only made sense if something returned it, you know. And then I would be careful to say, I really appreciate that. That's wonderful. That's miraculous. And that seemed to work. And I always wondered, we've moved since then, and I've always wondered what would have happened if I would have left out, like, say, Scrabble pieces. If it was something trying to communicate and I just wasn't ready to hear it, because I was probably not ready to hear it. But yes, I felt like something was trying to reach out. It's interesting. Right. And not
I had an experience at the Spring Hill Cemetery. There's a little girl who died when she was 7, and she has a little grave where people put toys down. And one time when I was there with my youngest daughter, she had noticed that one of the porcelain dolls that was left there, its face was all smashed in. And she said, "Mom, can't we get a new doll for this little, you know, girl's grave?" And I said, "Yeah, that's a good idea." So the next time I went to Goodwill, I got a little porcelain doll that was cute. My husband and I went a few weeks later, and I left the doll there for her. And I went back about 3 or 4 months later with my team to do an investigation at night. And we had put the spirit box in the little recorder right next to the doll. And I was talking and I said, "You know, how are you doing?" And at the time we didn't hear anything. And when we went back and I downloaded the recording, very clear, crystal clear, a little girl's voice came and said, "You left me the dolly."
Wow.
It was amazing.
That's a class A.
It was amazing. Yeah. And I kept listening to that over and over because I was just in awe with, like, wow, this stuff really works. And I just, it was so fascinating. So I can't wait till Sarah starts getting some of this under her belt. She hears stuff like this come through because it just shows what we're doing is worth doing.
Right.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. That's really fascinating. I've been hearing more and more about EVP and the history behind it. And one of the scientists who worked on very early EVP studies apparently comes back from the other side periodically to talk to people today. And, you know, even former colleagues and stuff, and leaves these weird messages on their answering machines and such, or voicemail, what have you. And I mean, wow, that is a still evolving science that is really, really interesting.
It is, because you can be, and I'm a huge, I don't know if you've heard of the, like, Estes method.
Oh, yes.
But
I watched Hellier. That's what I've heard. Okay.
Right. I've done it several times now, and I've gotten really, really good results with it. But in the times that you haven't heard anything, if you've got two people doing the Estes method, you put a recorder near both of them, sometimes neither of them will hear anything, but we've gotten where one person has gotten like class A EVPs on their recorder. So it's just interesting. It almost seems like if you leave out several tools, like, we're like, "Here, spirit, use this to communicate." Like, that's so arrogant. You know?
Options. I'm reminded of like hostage negotiation with the police where they throw the phone through the window or whatever. That may not be the route that it wants to connect. You know?
Jen and I, like, one spirit box, we're going to have 3 and 4 recorders. Yeah. And
so, that's right.
Walkie talkies. So, you know, they can talk wherever they want to.
Right. They don't work well on demand.
No, they don't. No.
And that is one truth that keeps being repeated and repeated. This none of this stuff happens on command, and that's why so often mainstream science can't accept it, because it doesn't, you can't just make it appear. And it's if you're a geologist, the rocks aren't going to lie to you, you know what I mean? They're not going to manipulate anything. If you're a chemist, the chemicals are what they are, and they do what they do every single time. You mix this and this, and this happens. Anything involving intelligences, entities, beings, doesn't work like that. And, you know, so many factors may affect results that, you know, they just don't feel like doing it for on command. You know, they're not going to work like that. And
I have found oftentimes it's when you least expect it that they show themselves.
Like, you're walking to a cemetery with nothing but with batteries and one REM pod.
Or even in your home when you're least expecting, like when you see, we were talking earlier about shadow people figures. And figures. It's like, you, when you least expect it, they catch you in the corner of your eye. Like they peek around a corner or something, but it's not when you're sitting there like demanding, are you around the corner? Show yourself. It's always when you're least expecting it, when you're relaxed and you're just being yourself. And all of a sudden, boom,
you're trying
I
to
think
get
I
your,
just saw something, you know, like that. So
that yes. kind of leads me to what I was going to ask. Are either of you doing any magical practice currently? Or anything similar there too.
I'm getting back into it. Yes. I'm getting back into not so much. So Wicca's a religion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not currently practicing a religion, but folk magic.
Oh, very interesting.
Right. So, you know, we were doing a lot with like, and prior, I have studied a lot of Buddhism. I would have considered myself a secular Buddhist. Again, not the religion, not the spiritual aspect of Buddhism, but the practices with meditation. And it's very similar. It's very similar. I feel like the folk magic is a step up in intention setting. You know, and then using the tools adds a bit of ritual to it, just as it would in a Catholic mass, you know, the mm-hmm. candles and the herbs. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we recite prayers and, I don't think it's any different than, you know, somebody, chanting or praying or whatever their ritual is that brings them closer to spirit. Because as Jen and I discussed earlier, I believe that whatever's true to you is true. I believe in Jesus, I believe in Buddha, I believe in Muhammad, I believe in, you know, Yahweh. I believe these are all true.
I feel like being raised in a Christian home and studying, I mean, I've read the Bible through and through and been in intense studies and went to Bible colleges and also studied many other, I've studied Wicca, I've studied Muslims, I've studied all different kinds of religion. And when you look at the basics, they pretty much all intertwine. I mean, you look at what Jesus meditated. Jesus talked to the dead. Jesus often used different things out in the wilderness to heal. I mean, it's amazing to me when you really study all these different things, they kind of all interconnect. And so when one group is saying we're right and you're wrong, it just blows my mind because it just shows kind of ignorance. It's like, well, did you really study what this other maybe religion or beliefs are? Because you'll find out it has a lot of similarities to probably what you believe.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense. In fact, not to toot my own horn, but I recently wrote a book that covers some of those topics.
Oh, wow.
Cosmic Collision is out there. It's available on Amazon, folks. So
okay.
It's a novella. It's a 140-page novel that addresses what if a prophet emerged today, like right now, a real prophet.
Right.
How mm-hmm. would different factions react? And I find it interesting. I think people who listen to this would probably find it interesting. It's a pretty blatant plug for a book I wrote, but again, it's available on Amazon for less than the price of a Happy Meal. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's out there.
And better for you. Because books are always better than Happy Meals, Vincent.
That's right. Well, reading is knowledge, and knowledge is food. So,
yeah.
What I brought that up, though, is to say that if you believe that God only spoke to your narrow band of people, you have a pretty small God. You know, any God worthy of being called God would have talked to everybody and not just a narrow band. That doesn't mean that your narrow band is wrong. It just means it may not be the full picture. And that's what I believe, for what it's worth, you know.
Yes,
and we believe that too.
We do. That maybe God meets you where you are, and all are true. Like we said, both things can be true. I think all things can probably always be true.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that ever tells you you're wrong is kind of small-minded.
I think the thing Sarah and I really just touched on is like if we were asked to like come and it had ritual. A lot to do like with satanic stuff, that's probably where our roads would stop and we'd probably be like, yeah, we're not going to get into things that are harmful to others
or negative and yeah, negative. No hurting.
I mean, obviously that's out there. There's a lot of evil, there's a lot of wickedness.
Oh yes, well yes, and things stuff, we've discussed. Yeah,
right. We're about healing and love and
yes,
empowering people. Yes.
So if your thing is magic, then we will do a magical ritual with you. If you feel that your home needs to be prayed over, we both have Catholic backgrounds, we'll pray with you. We will make sure
they practice certain native.
We want to respect that.
We will also participate with you in that too. We're not closed to any of that. So
that seems like a really open and helpful mentality. That seems really great.
Thank you. We're trying.
I think that you have a great future ahead of you, most definitely.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. We think so too.
there is two things that I wanted to ask you before I forgot or digressed or what have you. What are your views on reincarnation?
I think we touched on mine.
And as you know, as far as like, of course, in my upbringing, you know, when you die, you pass on to either heaven or hell, you know, basic. But I don't think it's that simple. Like you said, that's a narrow-minded way to look. Because there's Christians out there that believe that Christ walked the earth in the Old Testament.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And showed up more than once.
It started with an M, a man that was in the
Melchizedek.
Old
Testament. Melchizedek, yes.
And so they believe that he was then, and so then he came back again. They also believe that John the Baptist was Enoch. So they, you know, there's different Christians that say there's proof in the Bible of reincarnation. So I personally, I can't say that I don't, because I don't have enough evidence to say yes or no. Do I myself believe that I'm reincarnated? I haven't had that personal experience yet, but maybe Sarah has, to say yes, definitely. I have had facts that I know I have lived a past life, where people have said, yes, I know I have, and have proven it. So that's another whole nother study. And
yes, no, I fully,
that you could really,
I mean, I definitely have read about samsara, you know, the cycle, a lot. But again, like I had my experience in England, and I've had experiences in the fort, and I've just had in my gut that I know I've been here and I've gotten the facts, but there's just no way of knowing if that is a psychic imprint that I'm getting from the actual land itself, because the energy there is so strong, or if it's a past life experience. And I don't think we know enough about, like, we don't even know, living here, me and you, Jen, sitting here right now, where our mind exists. Where's our consciousness and our body?
That's true.
Where it goes after we die, this is why we're doing this. Yes. We know from our research, and we know from our own first aid series, it goes somewhere.
Yes.
Where it goes.
We obviously hope that it's a much better
place,
scenario and place after this. I mean, we always want better. I mean, who doesn't? You know, I think that's why a lot of religions think of a heaven instead of just coming back to this earth again. And a lot of people who have terminal illness and stuff are like, this is hell on earth. I don't want to come back here. You couldn't pay me to come back here, you know? And so I think that affects their personal belief, because of course people want to think, when I cross over, when I pass away, when my spirit goes, it's going to be 10 times better. You know, it's going to, you know, I'm not going to get sick. I'm not going to have these weaknesses. I'm going to have a lot of these answers that my mind questions all the time. Mm-hmm. So
I think this is like Hell Week. I think this is like boot camp. You were in the military. You tell me. I think
yeah, that's do you want to repeat?
Yeah, corporal living is like, I'm joking, but I'm not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think we're here to learn from each other. And maybe that's just true. Maybe if you refuse to learn from the people around you, maybe if you refuse to listen, maybe if you refuse to love, maybe you aren't going to come back until you learn that lesson, which would be a blessing if you look at Christianity as opposed to the other option, which is going to hell.
Yes. So I'll take this over and over anytime.
Yeah, till I learn, right?
Yes, and that's
right.
I've had some pretty intense past life memories, or what I interpreted as past life memories. I can't guarantee they were, but and that has always seemed to me like one of the most real things that ever happened to me, and they were very based around the military. Way when I was like 12 years old, you know, way before I had any actual experience with anything. And that I just felt to my core that I had been in World War II and had died there. And very rarely did I have recurring dreams, like almost never. But I did have, as a child, a young child, like maybe seven, have these recurring dreams that I was the cartoon character Popeye the Sailor Man, okay? And that I died, and that I went to heaven. And heaven was full of these beautiful ethereal angels, but I was this rough, rugged sailor that was not cut out to enter heaven just yet. And I fell from heaven straight down and landed in a field. And then woke up and was alive, and that was like, that was a recurring dream. Which seems to, you could fill in the blanks pretty easy, that seemed to be saying, you're not ready for this yet, but maybe this life you'll learn what you need to learn. Or maybe the next one, or maybe we could do this all day, you know? The universe kind of saying, we can do this for an unlimited period of time until you get it through your head. And that, you know, it sounds simplistic maybe, but it was very, very real to me, you know?
Right. Can I ask you a question then?
Oh,
you
please.
Think that's what led you, was that what led you to go into the military yourself?
I was obsessed with it since I was a small child, which is funny because neither of my parents were in the service. No aunts and uncles. If you go far enough back, like World War II generation, some great uncles were, but I was just obsessed with it. When I was like five, I was sweating my mom to make me a little soldier suit and, you know, get these patches that were from the Army Navy store. And, you know, I had a soldier suit, and then my grandmother made me a sailor suit. And I was just into that. And nobody was into that in 1976 where I was growing up, you know.
No.
You know, quite the opposite. I mean, it just wasn't a thing, you know. And I was just, it came, I don't know any other source, but it seemed like I was always, that's where I was going to be. And I kind of knew that my entire life, as long as I can remember. So that
was. Do you
think
maybe a spirit guide?
I won't rule that out.
It was showing you things?
I sometimes believe that too. And maybe it was ancestors. I mean, we're all intertwined with our relatives genetically, going way back. So, you know, we're connected because they're part of us. And like when we lose a loved one, that's why we grieve so deeply and we feel such a loss. And some people can't ever get over that grief. I know when I lost both my parents, it just was so hard. It felt like part of me, when people say when they lose somebody close like that, part of them is gone. It's a true feeling. It's awful. And so to me, like, they are part of us. And I think it was reassuring to me, like, because both my parents came to me right after they died in dreams that were super real to me.
Wow.
Like, it was as real as me talking to you right now. Mm-hmm. And and they both basically were giving me messages. And so I feel like they're still a big part of my life, even though they're not physically right here with me. They were letting me know, just because our physical body's gone, we're not gone. We're still part of your life.
Yeah.
And like when my granddaughter was
born,
she had the red hair like my mom, and her personality is so much like my mom. It's like, it's not, we kid around like, oh, grandma's reincarnated into Scarlet, my granddaughter. But I see parts of my mother in her. And it's crazy to think that, but she is part of my mother. And so I don't think we all understand that yet, how we're all intertwined. But does that have effect on how like you felt and what drew you to like the army and stuff? Does that affect how we live and our choices? It very well could be. I mean, all these things I'm hoping as we go on to the next, whatever it is, these we'll learn more and our knowledge of all this stuff will, our eyes will be open more to all of this.
And then we'll be trying to come back and tell people like you and you, like us in the future. We'll be banging on doors trying to tell them.
We're still here. We're still supporting you.
Right. I think that mostly spirits are. They're spirit guides and they're guiding us, or they're spirits trying to teach us lessons from where they befell. You know, obviously taking out of it just like the what we call ghosts, which Jen and I believe are, you know, just the energetical imprints, but like the conscious spirit, the intelligent spirit.
And one of your questions was about if we ever seen proof of animal spirits, and I actually have.
I didn't get to that. Okay, please.
On my SLF camera in my home, we had one of our friends sitting on a couch and she felt like a cat was crawling on her. So I said, let me go get my SLS camera and I'm going to see. There was a cat figure, stick figure, crawling all over her, and it jumped up on the end table and our lamp fell over. Wow. As we saw on the SLS camera, the figure of a cat jump on the table, there goes my lamp, and it fell over just as that cat hit that lamp. It was incredible. Wow. So I truly believe that there is animal spirits also.
I believe
that makes a lot of sense. I mean, people have reported it many, many times, you know, late pets coming back just to reassure them I'm okay. And, you know, I don't discount that at all. No. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to make sure I ask you before we run out of time, and it's you know, it's pretty flexible, but, you know,
we like to talk.
Hey, came to the right place, you know. Is there something about Florida? I've only briefly lived there. I lived in Pensacola for a few months, but Florida seems to be a very interesting state. I was told that Pensacola was the oldest city, European city in America, other than possibly for St. Augustine.
I
love St. Augustine. Yeah. But I feel like Florida, being a peninsula, being surrounded like it is by water, and obviously the water underneath us, I mean, Florida could sink like that, obviously, because we have natural water going underneath the plates of Florida.
Humidity and very charged storms.
Oh, yes. The lightning. And when lightning hits around you, I've never felt the energy out of a lightning bolt as I have in my backyard.
Right.
Like, seriously, the power it gives off. One time it hit one of our trees and it just split it apart like a toothpick. And when I picked up one of the pieces the next day that actually had got charred by the bolt, I took my EMF thing, put it next to it, and it went crazy. Wow. Like, it had so much energy still in just in that piece of wood from that lightning bolt. It was incredible. So I do feel like Florida just has this
energy around it. And if you take into account that Miami is the northwest corner of the Bermuda Triangle, I have a lot of experience in aviation. So I'm sort of really? Interested yes. in these things. Yeah, my husband's a commercial airline pilot. I was a flight attendant. And so we were watching, you know, the documentary of the Ghost of Flight 401 that Cindy Kaza and Steve Shippey did about the crash in the Everglades. They started talking to people about, in Miami, there is a place called Coral Castle.
Oh, yes.
You've heard of Coral Castle.
Oh, yes. It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, that Edward, I can't remember his last name, but he carved it, and space in spirits were instructing him to carve this castle out of just rock. I think it took him like 30 years because it was such a source of energy. And there have been a lot of plane crashes because there was the value jet crash as well in the Everglades. And weird, you know, aeronautical experiences in that part of Florida, like taking off through Miami, like instrumentation or landing malfunctions, because it, you know, possibly, quite possibly is that northwest corner of the Bermuda Triangle touching it as well.
Man, nobody ever talks about the Bermuda Triangle anymore. And I grew up on that, man. Yes, I in search of and Invisible Horizons and all those, you know, shows and books that talked about things that happened in the Bermuda Triangle. And of course, some of it's hype and some of it's, you know, apocryphal stories. But I think there's something to that. I really do. And I spent part of the holiday weekend binge watching Ancient Apocalypse on Netflix. And
love it. Mm-hmm.
So that whole area between Cuba and Florida and the whole Caribbean at one time wasn't underwater. And the things they find down there that used to be dry land, absolutely fascinating. I would not discount. I don't even think he makes the claim that that's Atlantis. But if it was, I would not be, okay, I'd be shocked, but not that shocked, you know?
Right. But
maybe there are leftover technology that's messing with our technology now from thousands of years ago. I think that that's certainly something that should be investigated, you know?
Oh, yeah. You need to talk to my husband again about the theories that the ancient aliens are actually under the water. Because, you know, him as a pilot, he's seen some stuff.
I would love to be able to do that.
I don't think he'd go on the record if he can with a real name, because he's a commercial cat.
Yeah. We may have to have like
some stuff. Yeah.
Leave the video out, you know, type of thing.
can we change his voice? Because he'll talk.
I'm sure there's a way to do it. Yes.
Okay.
Because that's fascinating, and that's not something you necessarily want to do under your own name, you know, if you have a sensitive license that you need to keep. Yes. that is really interesting because there's a lot there. Yes.
Right. So Florida, come here and hunt all hunters, because they're, we get undersold as haunted locations, I think, because we're not, you know, as old as New York or, you know, any of these old towns or some of the places in New England. But there, I think there has been, as like Jen said, with the natives, to so much ritual and history of the land here.
Oh, yes.
Of the land and the water underneath it that, I mean, I just think it draws.
Well, and people ask me all the time, why did you come live in Florida, you know, being from upstate New York? I can honestly say, since I was a little girl, that I've always felt, and maybe this is when reincarnation comes in again, that I did not belong in the North, that I needed to be living in the South. And I have been very depressed until I moved to Florida. I told my husband, because I said, when I graduate high school, I'm out of here. I'm moving down South. And I loved as far as Florida, like I wanted to be in very tropical area. And when I met my husband and his family lived in the North and my family lived up North, he's like, yes, but wouldn't it be nice to raise the kids around the grandparents? Yes. Okay. But I was very depressed all those years. And I begged him every year, can we please go try living down South? I have been so happy since I've moved to Florida. I can't explain it, but I feel like I'm home. And I tell him that all the time. And it's just, maybe it has to do with past lives or ancestors that have lived down South that have just drawn me back. But I feel like, you know, we have a draw where we want to live in life, and mine has been the South.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, that when you find your fit, you find it, you know?
Yes.
And that, I can totally get that. Yeah. Wow. Well, we have been here for 2 hours.
And oh my gosh.
It has flown by. I've really enjoyed talking
with you.
Great.
I know. This has been such a pleasure for us.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, Pleasure's mine, absolutely. I definitely want to have you back again.
Awesome. We'd like that too.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, then I'm going to wrap
up. Update you
up.
On our findings for future presentations.
Yep.
Yes.
That would be excellent. That would be excellent. Okay. Well, before I say goodnight to the listeners, please tell us where you can be found online.
Great. We can be found right now. We do have a website, www.floridaparanormalinvestigators.org. If you are more of an Instagram or a Facebook person, the pages experience just screwed me up. But right now, I'm getting the FPI page up. You can reach me at @just_Sarah_normal on Instagram, or we can be found on Facebook under, I don't know if you want to give your last name, but I have an anonymous Sarah Normal Facebook page, which has links to all of FPI's stuff. So that's where we can be found right now. We also both have emails, John@FloridaParanormalInvestigators.org and Sarah@FloridaParanormalInvestigators.org.
Great, great. Well, this hopefully will be far from your last appearance here. Definitely want to have you back. Thanks for coming and thanks for talking with me. Thanks for giving me a couple hours out of your life about this stuff, because it's been truly a delight. And I'm sure that the listeners have enjoyed this and look forward to the future.
Us too. Yeah. Thank you.
More than welcome. This has been The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Treewell. We have had Florida Paranormal Investigators Sarah and Jen on. And thank you for listening. Good night.
Thank you.